This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome, friends, to another r/malicious compliance video. Today we've got some great compliance stories, and our first story of the day is from Defiant Bad 9070. They'll sell me 3 and give me 1 free. You should too. Not me, but an interaction I saw a while ago. I needed tires, so I went to my usual store and was waiting to be served, but the gentleman in front was being difficult. See, the other tire shop was going to sell him 3 tires for $800 plus fitting and give him the 4th for free. Pretty good deal, right? Well, this tire shop weren't going to give him 1 free because they sold the same tires for $800 for all 4, including fitting. But darn it, this man wanted his free tire, so the clerk complied with his request. He raised the price on the tires, sold him 3 for $800, gave him a free one, and then charged him fitting on top of that. Not to mention that the fitting price at this shop was higher than the other. Customer got what he wanted, because the customer is always right. So they bought 3 for the price of 4 and got 1 free. Hey man, whatever, as long as the customer's happy, right? I'd just be afraid somehow that this, like, comes back on me for giving away a free tire, even though it was exactly the same price. Would it surprise you if management gave that worker a hard time for going ahead and doing this, despite literally getting the exact listing price of all 4 tires? Let me know what you guys think in the comments down below. Our next story is from Sirius Lampshade. I must call IT. You got it. Many years ago, I worked in a call center for a major credit provider. When I started, I was trained in certain aspects, but because I was saving for a house at the time, I put my hand up for further product training until 6 months into my employment. I was one of the more highly skilled agents on the floor. I was able to take calls from any queue about any product, as well as being trained to take escalations and complaints. A team nicknamed the Clock Watchers ran the floor, telling the agents when to take breaks and controlling the queues, as well as checking on any agent who was offline too long after a call. One of our systems was a DOS-like program. This was in the days when a Motorola flip phone was considered cutting edge. It was pretty reliable, but when it crashed, the only way to get it working again was by rebooting the computer. After working there long enough, you got to know by the time of day when the IT support guys would be around. And if you knew there'd be a wait, it was quicker to just reboot than to call them and have them tell you to. About 10 months into my employment there, I could reboot the computer and get all the necessary programs open and logged in again within 3 minutes. During lunchtime, for example, the hold for IT could be up to 10 minutes due to break overlaps. So when this program went down, I would flick my status to unavailable and perform the quick reboot. I bet you can guess where this is going. One busy day, the program crashed, but I was able to help the customer using other systems. And once I was off the call, I flicked into unavailable and performed the necessary reboot. As I was logging in again, I got a tap on the shoulder and turned to see one of the clock watchers pointing at her watch impatiently. I said, "My system crashed. I'm rebooting as fast as I can." She says, "You need to call IT if you have an issue. You can't just sit in unavailable." I said, "It'll take longer." She says, "Call IT for system issues. Otherwise, you are required to be taking calls." Now, I knew their KPIs were based on calls taken and customer hold times, but she did not want to listen. I called IT and told them I'd performed a reboot, and by the time the call was answered, I was back up and running. I didn't think much more of it until 2 days later when a mandatory coaching session showed up on my schedule. My team leader listened to my reasoning, but basically had her hands tied and went through the coaching with me. "Fine. You want me to call IT for system issues? No problem." Two of our other programs had what we called floor workarounds, where if the correct procedure didn't work, you could get around it. Not me, not anymore. Error? Put the customer on hold and call IT. System crash? Call IT. Program taking too long? Call IT. My stats went down the toilet. Then I had a night shift. Our IT guys went home at 8 p.m., but we had a team in another time zone. The wait times were horrendous. So at 8:30 p.m. one night, my program went down and I called IT. After 20 minutes on hold, the clock watcher on duty came to my desk to ask what was going on. I explained. She asked if I could just reboot because I was one of only three escalations trained agents on duty that night. I apologized and said I would get straight on it as soon as I'd spoken to IT. Just like I was coached to, I was on hold for just under an hour, and the IT agent sounded as exasperated as I felt. My next shift, I was given a memo stating that agents who had seniority could try rebooting before calling IT. Escalations is who you get when you ask to speak to a manager. In my experience, the longer the hold to get an escalation answered, the nastier the customer gets. Sadly, people like OP have to be the ones on the front lines suffering the pain of putting up with these things until they can finally prove that there's a rationale for allowing workers to just try the reboot themselves. Until somebody makes a point of making a fool of the whole system and showing a much easier way of going about things, until then a lot of places shove the process down your throat. Our next story is from the Clever Bit 58093, Porsche Germany Calamity. So I'm a British guy living in Germany. I've always wanted to drive a Porsche 911. So a few years ago I bought one, which turned out to be full of problems and broke down. I had to fight for 3 months for that car to be taken back by the dealer, and went to arrival, which is where the fun begins. I made the dealer very aware of the mess the first car had caused. I told them up front, order me a new car, give me the spec I want, and I will be a customer for life. Cross me, and I will be a nightmare. It's a 200,000 car. I want what I'm paying for, nothing less. You see, Germany can be very xenophobic when it comes to overseas folks with money, even if they work bloody hard to earn it. It's like I wear a sign saying, kick me. So the specification is submitted and it's got all the toys, aggressive racing suspension, tech, the lot. 3 months out from delivery and I'm asked to come sign something at the dealer. It doesn't look right, so I query, where have my options gone? Somehow a few items have fallen off the list and the suspension is the softer variant. I go mad. Where are they? It's apparently my mistake. And after several hours of arguments, they admit they changed the car. I'm told I'm committed to taking the car regardless, or they want me to pay $20,000 to cancel the car. I call my lawyer, so I'm not committed to the car, and in fact, as the dealer changed the order, turns out I have a chance to force the dealer to take the car back. Plus, as I'm freelance, all verbal promises are seen as a contract. Game on. So I collect the car from Stuttgart. It's lovely, but it's not what I ordered. Shame that. Cue the call to the lawyer before I agree to sign, in front of the guy from Porsche, and I'm told to sign for the car with conditions. Porsche are not happy with this, and the dealer is shouting down the phone. Next, the dealer refuses to ever speak to me again. No matter, that's fine. I insist on returning the car free of charge. The Porsche dealer knows they must accept, and every day they take to think about it costs them money. I return the car for a full refund 3,500 kilometers later, 3,500 very fast kilometers, with the red line being reached daily. I'm yet to replace it, but whatever I get is unlikely to be a Porsche. It's not like I didn't warn them. I'm surprised at the lengths to which OP described they had to go to get out of being responsible for this car. I mean, it just seems pretty straightforward that if you sign an agreement for a car with certain kinds of specs, and you don't get exactly that, like a lot of things are changed, that you should not be expected to pay for something especially worth that much money? That is literally not what you ordered. I mean, whether you're ordering a pizza and they got the pizza totally wrong, or you're ordering a $200,000 sports car and they got the internals all wrong on that, I don't think you should be liable for any messed up order. Our next story is from Red Sty. Buy a Mercedes instead? Okay. I'm from Belgium, Europe. This happened to my father about 25 years ago, but I was there to enjoy. Looking for a new car, we visited a few local dealerships. After having seen some cars that were within specifications, he fell in love with the brand new Citroën C5. After a test drive, my dad told the salesperson, dealership owner in this case, that he loved the car but had some concerns with visibility regarding parking because the nose dropped a lot towards the front. It was the late 90s, so parking assist was not yet a common thing and more of a luxury. The owner replied, clearly offended, If you can't park, you should buy a Mercedes. They have a sight like a gun on the front. A man of principles and pride, my father told the man he was taught by his dad to always accept good advice. And we walked out without giving the surprised man another look or a chance to respond. Since the car he was driving at the time was still running smoothly, he took his time continuing his search. By pure luck, 2 weeks or so later, he runs into an old friend who tells him he'd bought a Mercedes C-Class some months prior but didn't like it as much, the car being a bit too big for him. After some back and forth, they agreed on a price my dad couldn't refuse, especially since this has always been one of his dream cars. About 1 week later, the transfer of ownership was complete and the car had new tags and insurance. The very next morning, we drove to the Citroen dealership, asking the rep on duty to speak to the manager personally. We waited patiently until the man came out of his office. He seemed to remember us as he gave us his biggest and somewhat arrogant smile. Just to be sure though, my dad reminded him that he'd been there not long before to buy the C5, but that the kind and honest man had told him to buy a Mercedes instead. Still full of himself, he informed us that he remembered and started moving towards the nearest sales office, inviting my dad to discuss price. My dad told him this wasn't necessary since he had wisely accepted the man's advice and pointed outside to the sparkling Mercedes parked conveniently right in front of the big windows. For the second and last time, the man was left speechless as we casually walked outside and drove off. All I personally know is if I was going to go into business or try to buy from any kind of dealer, if I was treated the way this salesman treated OP or OP's father, I would refuse to buy from anybody like that. In no way would I be giving thousands of dollars in commission to a person that says, "If you can't park, you should buy a Mercedes." You raise a legitimate concern that you have, and they go and essentially crack jokes about you. You're gonna go and belittle me and my concerns? Maybe I am a bad parker. Either way, my business here's done. I've got better things to do than deal with one of the worst salesmen I've seen. And our final story of the day is from Wildcat B. You should fire us. Okay. My family runs a small trucking company. Depending on where you are in the world, you might call us a P&D company. A final mile company, a white glove company. Basically, we handle the kind of stuff that you might buy to have delivered to your home or business that's too big for someone like UPS to deliver, but not big enough for a tractor trailer to haul, and or stuff that actually needs to be brought into the home and set up, like furniture, appliances, etc. A lot of what we've hauled over the years is stuff going to small stores that can't take delivery by large truck. Construction sites where large trucks can't get in and out, neighborhoods and apartment complexes. We don't work for the people buying the stuff, we work for the people selling or shipping it. But as we tend to see the same business owners a lot, we've developed great relationships with them over the years. We don't get rich, but we've been pretty comfortable over the years. One of our major stressors has been a longtime shipper who has, or rather had, become increasingly demanding as time went on. Now, when I say long time, I mean it. We made our first delivery for them over 50 years ago. Our company's been doing business with them longer than any of their current employees or management staff has been there. There was one point not too long ago where the retired guy who came in a few hours a day to sweep our warehouse because he was bored sitting at home literally knew more about this shipper's systems than their senior field rep who was supposed to be supervising our operations. We have been a small but vital part of their network for so long that almost no one there really realized how much we did for them. We've seen field reps come and go. Some have been great, some have been a little challenging, but most have, once they realized what was going on, largely left us alone to do our jobs. One even called when he took over our area to ask who we were, because his predecessor had no notes on us at all because they'd never gone to visit. We've just been mostly quietly plugging along, taking care of their customers, in some cases for generations. Well, the latest rep was a genuinely unpleasant person. He was arrogant, abrasive, casually insulted our employees. Honestly, it's not worth getting into the minutiae here. He wasn't someone we wanted to work with. But I'm able to put on a happy face and get along with about anyone when needs must. So, onward we strode. As I said earlier, the shipper had been getting more and more demanding as time went on. Systems had been getting harder to navigate, inventory had been getting harder to track, phone trees had grown into banyan nightmares, More and more layers of bureaucracy had been added, and with every change, they'd grown less agile, slower, more difficult to deal with. One day, the field rep called because he didn't like how we'd answered an email. Not that we hadn't answered it, just that he didn't like the manner in which it had been answered. After decades of dealing with this shipper, being micromanaged to that level was not something that we were interested in. The manager here, who was dealing directly with him, tried to defuse the situation, but it kept getting worse until the field rep said, "If you aren't happy with the way things are going, maybe you should just quit." Oh, okay then. We started running the numbers, looked at all our other businesses, decided that we could indeed go on without them, and then I called the field rep to have a frank conversation with him. And then I wrote a short, polite, direct letter to our customer of over 50 years, telling them that we were firing them. We didn't just pull the plug, we gave them a full 60 days notice, so they'd have time to get something worked out. And they didn't. We've always been here for them, they've never had to worry about it. They had someone they thought was going to be a replacement, but, well, as of today, most of their customers in this area haven't had deliveries in a week, some longer than that. Many don't know when they'll get their next shipment. That field rep might still have a job when all is said and done, but it's not our problem anymore. Our phone keeps ringing, people looking for their freight from that ship.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Sorry, you'll have to call them. Well, it only took them 50 years, but they finally managed to sour a relationship with a company that they were codependent on. I imagine as this company gets handed down from generation to generation, there was probably going to come along somebody that was just probably handed things down left and right, probably just didn't get the business that well. Honestly, having a relationship of 50 plus years between two entirely different companies? Pretty impressive that it even went that long. You would think maybe just at one point, one company would outright buy the other or find a way to incorporate that workflow into their business. Kind of like how Amazon, when they mostly did UPS or FedEx deliveries, now have their own giant fleet of Prime trucks. One of my personal favorite stories. This happened a few years ago. To set the scene, I was working at Target and Starbucks and was going to school full time. I would work Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday from 6 to 2:30 at Target and then 3:30 to 11 at Starbucks. Tuesday, I had class and worked Starbucks. Thursday, I had a full day of classes. And then Sunday, I worked at Target. I also don't drive. So I would be walking to and from both jobs and school. That means my 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. days actually started at 5 a.m., and ended at 11:30. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday were 18 plus hour days. All on my feet. Needless to say, I was tired. And I'm a hard worker, so I never slouched in my job, and usually worked harder than those around me. I accept that I'll usually be working harder than others. I usually don't mind, because it's who I am. Now, mostly it was fine, except the back-to-back 18 hour days on Friday and Saturday. Man, did that one hurt every week. And then at Starbucks, it started being the same closing shift. We'll call him Doofus. And Closer, we'll call her Coke because, you guessed it, she was on Coke. Well, all the drugs, but the Coke made her hard to work with. Now, Coke wanted to be a supervisor and Doofus was lazy, so Coke would do Doofus's job and Doofus would do nothing. So that resulted in a very tired me having to do most of the closing tasks every Friday and Saturday by myself, while helping every customer in the cafe and drive-thru while making all their drinks and food. Again, alone. I'm normally a fun person to work with, who jokes and keeps things light to help myself through my shifts. But this closing team was slowly killing me, so one weekend, Saturday, I just stopped talking to Doofus and Coke and just went about my job. I was still pleasant as freak to the customers because they weren't the problem, and still did more than my fair share of work. I just did it silently. Now, because I was in a bad mood, so was everyone else. Doofus literally cornered me and told me I needed to change my attitude. I ignored him, and that was that. He only spoke to me to send me on breaks or tell me where to go when I got back from breaks, and those few words were said in less than pleasant tones. Didn't faze me, I just did my job. So the next weekend rolls around, it's earlier in the day on Friday, maybe 6 p.m., so there are more people still working in the store, all of whom also had issues with Lazy Doofus and Coke, and knew how they were treating me later in the evening. So Doofus and Coke start in on not being helpful, so I start going quiet on them. Not rude, not disrespectful, not spiteful, just quiet. So Doofus pulls me aside and says, and I quote, "I'm going to need you to chipper up, or I'm going to send you home." Oh boy. I said okay in the flattest tone I could muster, walked into the back, grabbed my things and clocked out, and then walked out of the store. This has nothing to do with the malicious compliance, but it's a good part of the story. The subway next door to me had their cameras down, so they'd been hooking me up lately with free subs. So I stopped and got my mom and myself free sandwiches, and the wing place would give me free fries. So I picked up some fries and then headed home to get to hang out with my mom, who I barely saw anymore because of my schedule. We watched a movie, and I got to bed early. It was great. So one of my homie coworkers who was still working texted me about how badly Doofus was freaking out and how he was contacting my store manager about me walking out, but how proud he was of me for actually walking out even though I just made his job harder by leaving them short-staffed. The aftermath, the next day I was heading out to work at Target and I stopped at my Starbucks to get coffee on my way, as I always did. So I walk through the door and see my store manager coming out of the back room. He walks straight into the lobby towards me, oh freak, walks directly up to me and gives me a hug and asks if I'm okay. He said, "I know you wouldn't have walked out unless it was really bad." What the freak? I love that man. I guess Doofus had been texting him freaking out and my store manager told him, "You can't threaten to send someone home and not expect them to leave," and basically told him he needs to deal with his repercussions. It was such a good feeling knowing my manager had my back. I would have gone to the ends of the earth for that man. And Doofus never threatened me with anything ever again, and even tiptoed around me for a while after that, made sure Coke was working on her job, and made sure I wasn't working too much harder than everyone else. What I love about a hard worker is that you should always have some kind of leverage. If you're somebody that, like, they depend on, or you're somebody that just gets stuff done, more likely than not, you got a little bit of sway here and there. I just love that in this story, you can tell that the manager is so behind OP that they're not tolerating Doofus's stuff for even a second. Whatever you're currently doing, whether it's a job or school, do you deserve some leverage? Let me know what you guys think in the comments down below. And by the way, if you're enjoying these stories, make sure to hit those like and subscribe buttons down below too. Our next story is from Depressed Popoto. You can't be alone with the kids. So I'm sitting here at work and listening to malicious compliance stories on a podcast. I just remember this story from when I was about 15 years old and working my first job. This was in the mid-90s, so some of the memories are a little on the fuzzy side. I was 15 years old and able to finally work my first job. I took a job to work in the local daycare center in our town during the summer. I was working with some awesome preschool teachers, but there was one that we can call Nancy because I don't remember her name. She was a complete and total witch. She would always chew me out for not moving fast enough with getting a snack out to the kids, or being fast enough with taking a child to the bathroom. The playground was above ground, and the preschool room was below ground. There were huge windows that even through the walkway was partially blocking the view of the playground. You could still look down into the preschool room and see everything that was going on. The kids usually went out to play after nap time, so usually around 3 or 4 p.m. before parent pickup. We had a little one that was about 2 or 3 that was still in pull-ups and was potty training. She would have accidents sometimes, so she would have to be escorted to the bathroom. Nancy's favorite thing to witch at me about was that I had to take this little girl to the bathroom to get changed. But I wasn't allowed to be by myself with her. I asked her why she didn't go and take her down to the bathroom herself then. And her response to me was, "I can't leave you alone with the kids on the playground. I get it, a safety issue." So Nancy would send me to take the little girl to the bathroom, but then would yell at me because she couldn't see me with her. She would witch at me every day about this. My teenage brain was like, "What the freak, lady? How am I supposed to do my job?" So I came up with a plan. One day she asked me to take the girl to the bathroom, and she kindly reminded me that I couldn't be out of view while taking her to the bathroom. Fine, no problem. So I took the girl to the bathroom. I kept the bathroom door wide open, gave the little girl verbal instructions within earshot, easy enough for a 2 or 3 year old to understand, and stood out in the classroom so she could see me. I told the girl to pull off the wet pants and throw away the pull-up, which she did like a big girl, her words. Then I told her to come to me. She walked out into the empty classroom within eyesight of Nancy on the playground, standing and staring down, watching me. I helped her get her clean pull-up and pants on and took her back up to the playground. Nancy was pissed. "Why did you do that? She needed to be taken care of in the bathroom." I just looked at her in the eye, all innocent. "But you told me that I wasn't allowed to be alone with the kids, and you had to see me at all times." So that's what I did. I didn't get fired. The director of the preschool asked me what happened, and I don't remember her exact response, but I do remember there was a chuckle. Probably not very malicious, but malicious enough for a teenage girl that was super shy in the mid to late 90s. Not gonna lie, all throughout the story, I thought this was gonna be about a guy, and like that being the reason why they were like, "Oh, you can't be alone." But then OP got to the very end and they said that they're a teenage girl. I don't understand if this is part of their job description or what they're supposed to do. Literally, how else are they supposed to do it? Actually, having looked in the comments, I guess it was an insurance liability thing. I guess it's too much of an insurance liability to allow minors to have sole care of children. But what kind of jerk is going to enforce that over a 5-minute bathroom break? And our final story of the day is from Attempt Typical. Okay then, I'll deal with it myself. I went into a local cannabis dispensary to get a dual cartridge CBD/THC vape pen that was rechargeable to check out. I'm in cancer treatment recovery and use CBD/THC to help with muscle soreness on longer rows of 10 km, and the product seemed to fit all the boxes for me. It was $60. I didn't have time to try it out that day and the next one. I took a few vapes and it didn't seem to be working. I plugged it into a USB-C cable into my laptop, the device didn't come with one, and went back to working right next to it. A few minutes later, I noticed a smell of burning wire and looked down and the disposable device is burning a hole in my desk and smoke is coming out the end with a charger on it. The distillate was bubbling and vapor pouring out the top. I removed it from the charger and let it cool down outside for a few minutes and then head back to the dispensary. I explained the situation to the clerk and said it was smoldering and reeked of electrical wires burning. And he said it sounded like user error to him and I should try a different charger for it. He said that they've had multiple people with this issue and it was always the same thing. He told me to take the device, which was a fire hazard at this point, and plug it back in and it'll be just fine. I asked him to write the instructions on the back of my receipt just for clarification, and I left with a pen. So I come home again, get a different charger and plug it back in to the same result, but this time I recorded it with my phone on and headed back to the store again. The clerk refused the return and said there was about 20% of the product missing, and perhaps I just vaped it and couldn't afford another. He did offer me 10% off on another order. He said I was free to contact his manager if I wasn't satisfied, and I could deal with it myself. I took the receipt and the pen and I came home, and I did just that. I first hit the corporate website of the Canadian company, which is highly regulated by federal and provincial cannabis regulations in my country, and found the CEO and noted his email address. I then figured out the distributor for the child and safety protection housing for the devices in question, and noted his email address as well. Next was the email address to report faulty and defective devices to Health Canada, as well as the regulatory branch of the Consumer Production Protection Agency as well. I sent them all a very factual email stating nothing but facts, and I included conversations telling me as a consumer to apply more electricity to an obviously defective device, as well as stating that a corporation with multiple reports of a faulty device are legally obligated to report and follow a lengthy investigation when situations like this occur in this industry. It's highly regulated and for a reason. I even sent videos. They had not done this. I finished everything off at about 11 p.m. last night, and I sat back and waited. I have a 16-year-old son who knew of the situation, and on the way to school this morning, we discussed it, and he bet me $20 that no one would call about it and that I should just let it go. I decided that it would go the other way instead. About 9:30 a.m., I get an email from the Indigenous Cannabis Producers PR department stating that she was escalating my concerns and someone would be contacting me shortly. I also received another email shortly after from the COO of the Child Protection and Safety Device Distributor, and she and the CEO wanted to discuss the situation with me as well. A call followed with the COO and the CEO of the distributor device maker, as this crap was now getting real for them, knowing everyone that needed to know now knew, and an investigation was imminent. I shared everything with them, and a call's being set up with the Chinese manufacturer to ask me questions about the device and circumstances of the failure, and I agreed to that as well. Lastly, the distributor offered to come by this afternoon to pick up the device, which is sitting safely outside in a box, as I was instructed to do so by the Consumer Safety Branch here in Ontario. She said she would include a few products and some swag for my efforts. Sadly, the retail store hasn't said a word, which leads me to believe that they really don't give a crap, or else they're too scared to call me back. As for my kid, I'm getting $20, and he learns a valuable lesson of sometimes it's the principal over the $60 device. I suspect the staff won't be telling anyone else to look after things themselves. Dispensary rhymes with Flash & Co., and they need to teach their staff some manners in dealing with customers who think they're all potheads trying to rip them off for $10 worth of THC vape. P.S. No, I did not steal or attempt to profit by the dispensary's ink pens. This was a THC/CBD vape pen. I am not a monster. Obviously, OP should have just been properly taken care of, considering they had more than ample proof that this device went and just burned up on them. I guess a place like a vape shop probably does have a lot of people that maybe they're in the live situation where they try to be a little bit of a scammer. At the end of the day, not a lot of people probably go to that length, but what OP did here is ostensibly the right thing to do. Clearly, nobody is holding these vape shops accountable for stuff like this. I've never really been clued a lot into the whole vape world and adjacent stuff, but I've always gotten the impression that these disposable vapes were never really that well made to begin with. So maybe they're just expecting you to expect that. I don't know. But with that being said, that's all the time we have for today. Now, if you want to hear some more awesome compliance stories, check out that video on the left. Or if you missed my latest videos, check out the video on the right. That's it. I'll see you all next time with some more stories.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.